David G. Smith has been a singer and songwriter and guitarist for many years. He spent some years in Nashville and a bunch of years in Iowa, and he is our Live Music Friday guest here today on WKAR's Current State. He performs later today at the Broad Art Museum, and we'll learn more about his latest CD and about him as well throughout the course of the hour. Lots more music to come here on a Live Music Friday. I'm Mark Bayshore. You've got Current State on WKAR. At the top of our program today, efforts continue on the Lansing City Council and in the local media to learn more about the mysterious and costly departure of a former city attorney. Back in February, Janine McIntyre agreed to a $160,000 separation agreement with the administration of Mayor Virge Bernero. Neither Ms. McIntyre nor the mayor has explained what led to her departure. The mayor negotiated the agreement with McIntyre with assistance from the law firm Dykema Gossett. The Lansing City Council was not included in the process. Later, the mayor described it as poor politics, but good business. One of our next guests says that on Monday she'll recommend that her fellow city council members hire outside legal help to learn more about the deal. Judy Brown Clark currently serves as president of the council. We are also joined by Eric Lacey, who's reported on this story for the Lansing State Journal. Eric writes in this morning's paper about additional documents about the McIntyre situation that were just made public yesterday. Judy Brown Clark, Eric Lacey, welcome back to Current State.
Good morning.
Let's begin with your story first in the LSJ today. Eric, you came into documents yesterday that tell us more about the role of Dykema Gossett in the separation agreement. They worked with the city and with Mayor Bernero, it appears, in this process. Talk to us about what we learned.
Yeah, well, you know, from the State Journal standpoint, we're just trying to piece together what we're able to get through the Freedom of Information Act. And, you know, it's kind of coming in bits and pieces. And, you know, what we got this week was more of a complete invoice from the Dykema Gossett Law Firm, which has an office in Lansing, has an office in Detroit. And we got a little bit more details as far as a breakdown of the legal hours that were billed to the city. And from what we can tell, at least so far, that the city was on the hook for about almost $10,000, a little over $9,000 for sure. And but in that, there were two lawyers that billed the city for hours of their services during the separation agreement negotiations for that McIntyre deal. But there's a third lawyer that's in question right now, because back in the end of March, Randy Hannon, Virge Bernero's executive assistant, mentioned this guy's name, Gary Gordon. So we've been trying to find out for weeks now, you know, who paid Gary Gordon to do the job as far as representing the city, as far as negotiating this separation agreement that the former city attorney Janine McIntyre got, which was a pretty big chunk of change, over $160,000. And I know Judy here will tell you that it was probably more of like a $200,000 deal when you factored in health care and things like that.
So the bottom line is there were three Dykema Gossett attorneys who worked with the city and or the mayor on this separation agreement, and we found out that two of them yesterday were paid by the city. It's not clear who paid Gary Gordon, and there's questions as to whether that may have come from the mayor's account. I mean, the mayor has a 527 account. It's legal, a 527 account, a city administrative fund. Is that kind of your number one question at this point, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, from what I can tell, I mean, I looked at the quarterly report of that account. It's called the City Administrative Fund, I believe, and anybody can look it up. It's publicly accessible if you know the number that it falls under, and on the IRS website, you can just punch in some numbers and pull it up. I mean, there's no indication from any transactions in that account that anything went to the Dykema Gossett Law Firm, but it does, I think, bring into question, who was he working for? Who was Gary Gordon working for, and who paid him? I find it hard to believe that a lawyer would be working for free on something like this.
Judy Brown Clark, you've had contact with Gary Gordon here in the past. You apparently mistakenly said that he was working for the mayor at one point and came back and said, I misspoke when I said that. What do you take from Eric's story here today in the end?
Well, he's reflecting what we're learning, too. Mr. Gordon left a message on my voicemail. We were kind of playing telephone tag. I had left on his message some specific questions. And so when he responded to me, he was responding to those questions. And so one thing I was getting clarification of, who was the client?
Mm-hmm. And that is still not, that's still not clear, then, I take it, whether the client was the mayor or whether the client was the city?
I think it's clear on how it wants to be framed, but I think from our perspective, if you look at what's said and what's not said, and if you look at what he said, I mean, who doesn't know their client when they're working for them? Mm. And so to backtrack and to clarify, and you said that, you know, it's my understanding that Mr. Bonero is my client, then I have to think that the scope of your work was targeted at specifically Mr. Bonero, and not necessarily the city.
Eric Lacy, I take it the new information doesn't shed any more light on why Janine McIntyre left the city?
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, we still don't know why. And I will say, in fairness to Mayor Bonero, I did ask him several weeks ago when he came in for an editorial board meeting at the State Journal, you know, if I gave him another opportunity to explain what he could about it, and, you know, what he said it was bad politics, but good business. He believed that deal was in the best interest of the city. That's what he told us. And I did ask him, did you pay for your own legal counsel? And he said, no, why would I? So right now, since we believe at the State Journal, this involves public money, since I'm sure Judy would also say this too. I mean, all sorts of people in the community want to know what's going on. And I'm sure she's fielded some probably interesting calls, maybe some crazy ones too, of people speculating what happened. But I think the public has a right to know what happened, especially when last June, Peter Lark, the former BWL general manager, walked away with $650,000. So $650,000 here, $160,000 there. We're not talking about chump change here.
It's taxpayer money. The documents say that the documents that you came into yesterday, Eric, say that her departure, Janine McIntyre's departure, was approved according to provisions of the Family Medical Leave Act. Judy Brown Clark, do you take anything from that? Could a medical issue be involved here, or what?
Well, we don't know under the FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act. Obviously, whatever the condition is personal and private. So whatever the justification for the FMLA, we don't know. But what we do know is that there's a process how FMLA is administered, and that process doesn't seem to comport with the typical way in which you do FMLA. And so when you're on FMLA, you're using, you know, all of your entitlement time. You're using vacation time, sick time, personal time until you exhaust that. And so we're trying to figure out what her time was. You know, how was she accruing time has also been an interesting formula we haven't quite figured out, because that was where the $33,000 came into for part of the bundle of the $160,000.
Right. Judy Brown Clark is president of the Lansing City Council. Eric Lacy is a reporter for the Lansing State Journal. We're talking about Judy Brown Clark's intention to bring to a vote Monday night a proposal to hire outside legal assistance to learn more about this separation agreement involving a former city attorney, Janine McIntyre. Let's move to that. You still tell us about the plan that you want to put before the council on Monday night.
Well, where we are is, you know, as council, we're limited in what we can and can't do. So we've pulled in all the existing and active FOIAs, which we received yesterday, which there were over 200. We've asked for the billing. We've, as a matter of fact, the Lansing State Journal has been more effective in receiving documents than we have. When Ms. McIntyre was first announced her leave, her departure, that press release was sent to the Lansing State Journal. To this date, we have not officially received that. So there's been a lot of information that has been obtained through FOIAs. And that's how we as counsel have received our information. So there's not a lot of cooperation and transparency within communication. So for us, as far as what we can do legislatively, the only way we can get our questions answered would be to get some legal assistance to kind of unpack what we do know, what we still need to know. And other than that, our hands are, we've pretty much exhausted our process.
Are you confident you'll learn more here in the coming days, Eric?
Yeah, we're still waiting. I hope so. But we're going to keep trying. You know, we still have Freedom of Information Act requests out there that the city attorney's office needs to respond to. And we will pursue this by any means necessary to make sure we get responses back. We're considering seeking our own legal counsel. Maybe I'm spilling the beans there. Maybe I'll get in trouble back in the office for saying that. But we take this really seriously. And, you know, I don't want to give any impression we're ganging up on the mayor, we're ganging up on the administration. But we're all for good government. We're all for transparency, just like the mayor was talking about after the 2013 BWL ice storm blowback that he received and the city-owned utility received, you know. And people have a right to know, especially in the city of Lansing, what's going on. Why was there a $160,000 payment? That's a lot of money for any community. And in Lansing, what? What's the average income of somebody in Lansing? Maybe a little under $50,000. So you're talking about $160,000, more than three times the amount of money that maybe the average person in Lansing makes a year. So that's a lot to look at.
If you had your way, would the paper line up legal assistance in this matter?
I think we need to wait a little bit more. I can tell you on my own, I cut a $38 check for a FOIA I'm still waiting to get information for. That I think could be maybe revealing, maybe not, but that'll probably, talking to one of my editors, Elaine Kulhanek, who's been working tirelessly and helping me and guiding me in this. When we get that back, it's going to be a story either way. I mean, we're gonna let folks know what we're getting back each time we're filing FOIAs.
Judy Brown Clark, another city council member, told me yesterday she intends not to go along with your resolution. Kathy Dunbar tells me the separation agreement was subject to a confidentiality clause, and there's nothing more an outside attorney could learn. What do you think of that?
We'll agree to disagree. I think there's a lot of information. Number one, the separation agreement, I would like you to come in tomorrow and say that you're going to resign and see if Michigan State pays for your salary for the remainder of the year and gives you full benefits other than the fact you asked. So it's, you know, there's a lot of pieces to this that just don't, I mean, you don't have a severance pay without cause. You don't pay somebody's health insurance for the remainder of the year without cause. You don't make a comment as relates to it's in the best interest. It's not, you know, politically correct, but it's a business decision without cause. So it represents more than just the separation of Ms. McIntyre. And if, you know, and so obviously some of us are more interested than others. I am very interested, and I think it represents something that needs some clarity and transparency. So she will vote no, I will vote yes.
Have you done a head count yet? Are you confident the measure will pass, or do you need more votes?
You'll see on Monday.
Do you know?
You know what? Today is Friday. Monday comes, we'll see. But I know that we're going to be transparent. There will be no question as it relates to us as a council that's transparent. And people are, you know, and here's the beauty of being able to take your own information, be discriminate as to what your constituents want. So it's not really what Judy wants. Judy's doing the job of what she was voted in to do. So I'm not representing what I want. I'm representing what my constituents are asking me to do.
Last Friday, the city's interim attorney, Joe Abood, told the Lansing State Journal, your paper, Eric, that, quote, the city does not have the requested records. All of this gets back to copies of the separation agreement. The city claims it does not have those. What do you make of that response?
Yeah, well, and that what he mentioned was a 2015 contract extension amendment to an existing contract that covered her for 2016. And I think a lot of folks find it hard to believe that nobody can find a signed contract extension she signed and the mayor signed. It just apparently is nowhere. And In addition to that, other contract extensions for other department heads, those can't, apparently can't be found either. So it all goes back to transparency. And, you know, I go back to with this Gary Gordon thing. Randy Hannon, the mayor's executive assistant, mentioned in a March public meeting Gary Gordon's name. So why doesn't the public have every right to know what Gary Gordon's role was in having negotiations dealing with public money? It's as simple as that. And with these contracts, they're public contracts. It's public information, and nobody seems to be able to find them within City Hall. I find that kind of hard to believe, to be honest with you.
Judy Brown Clark, do you think a hard copy of the separation agreement is in the possession of the city administration? Or do you, or as Eric wrote, it may not exist. What do you think?
I'm not sure. Do I believe that, I you know, knowing the capability of everyone involved, knowing how things typically work, I can't imagine that this documentation would not be available. Mm. And so I'm very interested in seeing what's within it.
Seems safe to assume Dykema Gossett may have the information as well, but they're not a public body, so I presume you cannot FOIA Dykema Gossett here.
Yeah, well, and just to clarify, you know, there was a separation agreement made public by the administration, but we're trying to piece together other documents that apparently were tallied up to create the payout that she received as part of the separation agreement. So, you know, missing contracts, contracts that weren't signed. I think Judy would agree with me there. You know, where does it all add up to where it came out to this $160,000 payout? Where did it all add up where she got all this vacation time and leave time and sick time, which was like something like, what, 400 hours or whatever it was when she left? You know, that's a pretty sweet deal for anybody on their way out, especially an at-will employee. So, you know, again, please provide an explanation. And to my knowledge, I've been at the LSJ for about over a year, and I think Mayor Bonero has been to one council meeting since I've been there, and ask him about that. Maybe he's been to more, and I want to be fair to him. But I did ask him, why aren't you attending more city council meetings? And he said, well, I'm represented. And who represents him at these meetings is his executive assistant, Randy Hannon.
Yeah. I want to make clear to our listeners that on more than one occasion in the past, we've invited Mayor Bonero onto the program to talk about this and other issues, and we've been unsuccessful, but we will continue to try. We want to thank both of our guests, Eric Lacey, a reporter for the Lansing State Journal, Judy Brown Clark, president of the Lansing City Council, who on Monday intends to propose that the city council hire outside legal assistance to learn more about the departure and all of the mystery surrounding the departure of a former city attorney, Jeanine McIntyre. Judy Brown Clark, Eric Lacey, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
She was the road. She was the guide. She was the passenger risking the ride. I wanted her to save me. Lord, she tried. First love. After the last one died. I needed her touch. Her sympathy eyes. I needed her hopeful lips to fix me inside. I wanted her to heal me, and she tried. First love. After the last one. I wanted nothing more than to move on with my life. But my heart kept hanging back. And she could see that in my eyes. she held my hand and I held my breath. We both let go. Then she said, will you be okay? Yes, I lied. First love. After the last one died. First love. After the last one died.
David G. Smith performing live here in Studio S on WKAR. The track is called First Love, and that's the title track from his new CD. If you want to catch more of David, he is set to perform an acoustic lunch set here today at the Broad Art Museum, along with a Pump House concert tonight, both of those performances here in East Lansing. So he's going from first thing in the morning to the last thing at night here. We appreciate David G. Smith being with us today. More music, and we'll learn more about David before the hour is through. Well, an uncommon astronomical event takes place on Monday. The transit of Mercury happens about 13 times a century. That's when the planet closest to the sun can be seen passing in front of it. And weather permitting, it'll be visible for about 6 hours through special telescopes here at Michigan State University in East Lansing. For more about the transit of Mercury, what a mysterious phrase, we welcome the director of MSU's Abrams Planetarium, Shannon Schmoll. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also joining us, John French, the planetarium's production coordinator. Welcome back, John.
Hi, Mark.
John also doubles as the director of the planetarium's even more mysterious Moist Towelette Museum. Now, Shannon, what exactly is happening to Mercury on Monday?
Well, not much is happening to it necessarily. It's just going in its orbit around the sun. But we are going to be lining up right with Mercury in such a position that it will look like it's going directly in front of the sun. Mm-hmm. And so we'll actually be able to see it essentially as a small little speck in front of the sun as it moves across the sun on Monday. And it'll take about 7.5 hours total for it to complete that path.
And 13 times a century is not too often.
Not too often.
Why does it happen so infrequently?
It's a matter of lining up just right. So if you think about the solar system as a disk and all the orbits are sort of on that disk, mm-hmm. Mercury's orbit is tilted by about 7 degrees off of that. And so we have to line up with Mercury, which happens about a few times a year, just right. But we have to line up with Mercury, but we have to line up with it in just the right spot that it's crossing into that plane of that disk.
Okay.
And so that's why it doesn't happen all the time.
Now, John French, I know it's not safe to look at the sun, of course. We've all heard that 100 times. But if you had sun safety glasses or took other measures, would you be able to see the transit?
Well, of course, you know, we're going to have telescopes set up so that people can see it.
You're making it very easy
right,
for
it'll
people
be easy,
to
but
see
without,
this.
Without a telescope, even if you just had like the eclipse glasses or even a Weldon glass, they say a number 14 Weldon glass allows you to look at the sun. But Mercury's, it's so small, it'll be pretty tough to see. I think it was about 150 times smaller than the sun. And so it's going to be just a teeny little speck. So really magnification with a telescope is going to be required to be able to see it.
And Shannon, you have a way to help us understand how tiny Mercury is going to look. You said if you hold out your arm, tell us how this works.
Yeah, so the sun is about 0.5 degrees in our sky. It's actually a lot smaller than we tend to think of it as. So if you stick your hand out with your thumb up, you can cover the sun with your thumb. And that's about the width of your thumb.
Okay.
So if you just do that, close one eye and look at your thumb, that's how big the sun is. So it's going to be 1/158 of that. So imagine 1/158 of your thumb in the sky. It's going to be a little hard to see that.
John, tell us a little bit more about what the planetarium has set up, the scopes that you'll have set up that people can view this through.
Right. We'll have several telescopes set up, and I think some of the volunteers from the Capillary Astronomy Association will be out there as well with their telescopes. And so we'll have
probably 3 or 4 telescopes set up. We have one telescope that is a special scope called a hydrogen alpha telescope that allows you to see some of the prominences and flares that happen on the sun. So that'll be an interesting view. And then we'll have some other telescopes that will project the image of the sun onto a large piece of paper so that it's kind of easy just to kind of look at it.
But you have what's called a Coronado Sun Telescope?
Yeah, that's the hydrogen alpha telescope.
Oh, okay.
So that's the one that really gives a really unique view. You can see a lot of filaments and flares and other things on the surface of the sun that you wouldn't be able to see under normal white light conditions.
I encourage anybody who has even a passing interest in this to check it out, because on more than one occasion I've gone to the planetarium, looked through the telescopes, looked at the moon. What was it I did about 5 years ago? I looked at the moons of Saturn. And so not only was Saturn dramatic with the rings around it, but you were seeing Saturn and you were seeing the moons. I think there are 9 moons around Saturn. And you couldn't pick out all 9, as I recall, but you could pick out 4, I would say, at least. It's really, really impressive stuff.
You know, the MSU Observatory is open one weekend a month, and next weekend, the 13th and 14th of May, is the next open house down there. So that'll be a great opportunity as well to take a look through the telescopes and see Saturn and Jupiter and Mars and some other stuff.
How much time do people have to actually see Mercury in front of the disk of the sun?
The transit starts at 7:13 a.m. and ends at 2:42 p.m., so it's about a 7.5-hour window. We will be setting up telescopes starting about 8:30 in the morning because we'll be in front of the planetarium. We have to wait for it to get a little bit higher before we can see it above the MSU buildings. So we'll be there from about 2:30 until it ends about 2:45 in the afternoon.
There's also a transit of Venus that is even less common than the transit of Mercury. Can you tell us about that, John?
Yeah, the transits of Venus are even rarer than Mercury. They happen, usually you'll have a pair of transits separated by 8 years, and then you go over 100 years until you have another pair of transits. So some of the listeners might remember the transit that we had in 2012,
yeah.
and 8 years before that. Well, the next one is 101 years from now in 2117.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's on YouTube somewhere, right?
Right.
So the transit of Venus, the transit of Mercury, and these occur, do these occur because these are the two planets that are between the Earth and the Sun? Is that at the heart of this, Shannon?
Yeah, so this only happens with the planets that are closer to the sun than us, because that means they can actually go in between the Earth and the sun. All the other planets, since they're farther, we have to look away from the sun in order to see them. So
also this month, May 22nd, what's called, there's some interesting things with Mars going on. We'll touch on these briefly. Mars opposition occurs. What is that?
An opposition is kind of like the opposite of the transit, where on May 22nd, Mars is going to be on the opposite side of the sky from the sun. So I don't think it would really line up exactly, but if you were on Mars, you might be able to see Earth transiting the sun.
Oh, I see.
Okay,
so they're as close to a straight line as they get.
Right, right. Although I think that the orbits are also tilted, so that probably is not going to happen from Mars. But an opposition of Mars is a great time to observe Mars through a telescope, because you can kind of imagine we're a lot closer to Mars when we're on the same side of the solar system. And so this is a great time to observe Mars through the telescope. You can see some details on Mars that you wouldn't normally see other times of the year.
Yeah, the closest approach, I also learned that takes place. This is May 30th. May 30th, Mars'
right.
closest approach occurs. Is viewing of Mars significantly enhanced when it's that much closer to the Earth or not?
It'll be brighter and look a little bit bigger than usual. And so it'll be a nice view and a good chance to see Mars. And if you come out and look at it through a telescope, you can start seeing some things like ice caps, depending on the telescope that you have.
Do you have the scope set up for Mars later this month or not?
Yeah, well, those will be set up at the MSU Observatory on the open house.
Okay, very good. I've been speaking with John French, production coordinator for MSU's Abrams Planetarium. Shannon Schmoll is the director of Abrams Planetarium. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Okay,
this was a fun segment.
My first girlfriend was sweet. My second girlfriend was swell. My first girl found out about my second girl, and that did not go so well. That's another story. Yeah, that's another story I can't tell. I like to give a little money to my mama. I'll give a little money to whoever needs help. Then there is I-R-S-O-L. That's another story. Yeah, that's another story. Well, I can't tell. Well, I can't tell. Well, I can't tell. If I'm heading for heaven or hell, I love my friends and family. I love most everyone else. But mean and nasty people who hate, well, they can go straight to, well, that's another story. Yeah, that's another story. Well, I can't tell. Well, I can't tell. I can't tell. If I'm heading for heaven or hell, I've contemplated and I have ruminated. I know a better life that don't sit well. And I've talked to the devil, yes I have. And I have, I talked to Jesus. They both left me talking to myself. Oh, what's with that? I can't tell. Well, I can't tell. If I'm heading for heaven or hell. So whichever place I end up, you won't know, because that'll be one more thing I won't be able to discuss. It's gonna be another story. Yeah, gonna be another story. Well, I can't tell.
I can't tell. David G. Smith performing live here today in Studio S on WKAR's Live Music Friday. Brought two guitars with him here, so we obviously heard the dobro that time around. David G., welcome to East Lansing.
Thanks for having me.
You're not your first time here, I understand.
No, we were my wife and I, this past August.
Okay. Was that your first visit to town?
It was.
Okay.
We were invited by the Boy Scouts to come up and play at their centennial celebration of the Order of the Arrow.
You had a lot of young listeners there for a day. Tell us about that. There were tens of thousands of scouts.
Well,
here
there
for
were
that,
there were 10,000. Yeah, there were
10,000.
10,000, and they came from all over the world, really. And part of my contribution was to perform a song that I wrote with a Michigan native who was living in Nashville at the time, right down the road from in Kalamazoo is where he's from originally. And we wrote a song about his scoutmaster and him growing up without his dad after a divorce. And so we performed. That song went a little bit viral in the Boy Scout community. And before I knew it, they gave me a call to see if I wanted to perform that song at the NOAC convention. Mm. So we performed it for 5,000 Eagle Scouts.
Good audience.
It
Boy
was
Scouts,
a
different kind of audience, I suppose, that many young guys.
And, you know, the I got the privilege to follow Mike Fossum, who is a commander for the International Space Station, and he gave a speech right before I came on and played. That was wonderful.
Mm. What got you started in music? How long have you been at this?
Well, I like to say it, the songwriting part is a life sentence. So second grade, everybody in the family plays. It was mandatory to take piano lessons.
Okay.
Yeah, and mom sang in the choir and played some piano, dad on harmonica and guitar, and I have five siblings, and we all play.
And this was where?
This is in Cascade, Iowa.
Which is where you call home now. You're in Iowa.
Just
right?
Down the road in a little town called Bluegrass.
Okay. Yeah. How old were you when you wrote your first song?
Yeah, I was in my teens. I'm going to say around 13, 14, somewhere in there. It was bad. It was bad.
You've dropped that one from your repertoire,
yeah.
Have you?
Yeah, and my memory. Yes.
Conveniently enough. You were in a band called Robin Banks some years ago that was managed by the late Ed Cassidy, which is a name that listeners of a certain age will remember, a band called Spirit. I was impressed with that connection here. What was that project all about?
Right after I graduated from University of Iowa, I was in Colorado for about 10 years, playing up and down the Eastern Range there. That project was primarily three songwriters writing original rock and roll. And then we had a full band, a five-piece band. And after a couple of years, Ed came along. I think he was in between Spirit projects. And he and his wife, Beverly, lived in the foothills up near Evergreen. And he heard us playing one night at the Little Bear. And he approached us, and we just kind of hit the ground running with him.
Mm. You've played a lot of rock over the years? Did you spend a lot of years plugged in?
Yes.
And being louder?
The first of those 10 years in Colorado, pretty much. And it just kind of eased itself into more the songwriting aspect of it, and picking up the I play keyboards in those bands as well, and then all of a sudden I started writing with mostly the guitar. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there an active music scene in Iowa?
Oh, very much so. That's the home of Dave Moore and Greg Brown and Bo Ramsey. Bo, who has toured with Lucinda Williams, and very very active.
Been on Prairie Home Companion before. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Are they based in one community there, or are they kind of spread around?
That group is, that class, you know, around Washington, Iowa City area. But there are, of course, the new people coming up, and they're all over the state, spread out all over. Nice to see.
You got a new collection of songs called First Love. We heard the title cut here a couple of songs ago, and you got some great people playing with you on the record, including Keb Moe, who blew me away here in East Lansing when he opened for Bonnie Raitt maybe 15 years or so ago. Mm-hmm. Really impressive musician. How did you connect with Keb Moe?
Mm. Well, that's how do you connect with a lot of people in Nashville. It's that kind of community. And I record my studio albums in Nashville. So my producer would be Blue Miller. And he and Keb had met through India Ari.
Okay.
Blue is the producer that helped break India Ari with Ready for Love. So I guess the story is I'm in the studio where we're getting ready to record this tracks for this song, I Can't Tell, which I just played. And I said it'd be nice to have somebody like Keb Moe do some slide work on this. And I was talking to somebody else, but Blue was in the control room and said, you know, what did you say? And I said, it'd be nice to have Keb Moe on this. So long story short, I didn't know at the time that he knew Keb, but Keb kind of lived around the corner from the studio. And 6 months later, he is in the studio on time and doing his thing. So, pretty cool.
How many days a year are you on the road?
It's that number is growing. Maybe about 100 shows a year, to 100, 150, something like that.
I know you take great pride and you spend a lot of energy on your songwriting. How has that experience changed over the years? What is it easier to write a song you're proud of than it was 20 years ago, or is it always, are you exacting enough here? Are your standards high enough that it's always a significant challenge?
It's a mystery.
Yeah.
It really is a challenge. It's, I never know what's going to happen with this process, and that's part of the draw for me. I think it's hard to, I'll come up with an idea. I don't know if it's going to fly or not. And I've gotten a little bit better about the maybe the nuts and bolts of putting a song together. But really to turn the phrase, to make the idea work, to how to best engage the listener, I don't know. That part is all a mystery to me.
Really elusive.
And I like that. I mean, I like that part of it. So
okay.
Yeah.
Come to groove on the mystery.
Right. Of it all. Yeah, the mystery of writing that song. I mean, how does this work?
It sometimes struck me. I've listened to a lot of music in my life. I've been a music lover for many years. I'm sometimes struck that, you know, songwriters are trying to come up with something different, but it's amazing how simple some of the most memorable songs are, and how unoriginal, really, the chords in some of the most durable songs are. It doesn't necessarily require cleverness. It's just you've got to create something new out of really old material, mm-hmm. You know, G, D, and A, you know. You can still create something pretty memorable and impactful out of those three chords. But at the same time, I keep thinking, well, you got to come up with something new. You've got to create something new. But it's the old building blocks are still pretty durable. They can still create something memorable.
Yeah, that's the framework is there, and it's been borrowed on, you know, forever. I do some workshops, writing workshops, sit in some panels that talk about songwriting. I think what makes a song unique, the best I can come up with is it's your experience, it's your life experience. And what can you bring to mm-hmm. the table that's new in a song? That's kind of where, you know, I go to.
And you kind of reached a fork in the road with regard to whether a song comes from you or whether it's really for other people. I mean, I know you spent some time writing songs with other people in mind. We'll continue that conversation in just a minute, but let's hear another song right now. David G. Smith is our guest here today on Live Music Friday on WKAR's Current State. This is called In the Silence.
She was always there for me, she was always there, with roots and canopy as unruffled as the morning air. I could count on her advice, she was like a mother to me. Now all I see in her vacant eyes is vulnerability. In the silence, I'm learning how two unfettered souls are talking now. I didn't know this language, I didn't know this life. All I felt was the anguish of having to see her in a different light. She used to be this one thing, she was a rock for me. But now there is this something new, possibility. In the silence, I'm learning how two unfettered souls are talking now. There are no rules, there are no roles. There is only real to fill up all the holes in silence. I'm learning how to unfettered souls have never been so close than we are right now. In the silence, in the silence.
David G. Smith, the track is called In the Silence. Is that from the new CD?
It is.
As well?
Mm-hmm.
First Love is what it's called. David G. Smith will be performing later today an acoustic lunch performance at the Broad Art Museum and at tonight's Pump House concert in East Lansing. I understand you came to something of a fork in the road here regarding your songwriting. I guess for a time, you were writing songs, I take it, a little too deliberately for other people to sing, and at some point you were encouraged to change that. Tell us what happened.
Sure. I made a move from Colorado down to Nashville for the specific purpose of just writing, pure songwriting, and kind of fell into this routine of checking the tip sheet, you know, to see who's cutting what, and what's Martina cutting this week, or Reba, or whoever. And I would get together, and a large part of the writing community down there is co-writing. So you're getting together with two or three other writers in a room and putting something together. And I think, as my bio says, I think I eventually was trying too hard. I felt like I was just losing part of me trying to write for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up in a songwriting retreat, and this was sort of last resort because I was thinking about just walking away from this whole thing, and it just wasn't feeling right. And there was Daryl Scott and Beth Nielsen Chapman and Mary Gaucher with the instructors there, and they got us one-on-one. There's only a dozen of us at this retreat. And they asked me, we were playing various songs. I was playing them songs that I did not pitch to other artists to cut. And they asked me what I was doing with those songs. And I said, I just write them to feel good, you know, and put them back on the shelf. And they, each of them told me, you need to be recording these and get out there and do this thing and quit trying to write for the music row, as they call it down there in Nashville.
Yeah. You have a big desire to give back to the communities where you perform. You've talked about mentoring others and supporting causes like St. Jude's Children's Hospital in Boys Town. How did that unfold exactly?
That has been there for a long time. Boys Town and St. Jude, I know we've been contributing for over 20 years, and I think I got to a place in my life where I'm very lucky to be out here back in the saddle full time as an artist, as a writer. And so there's just a sense of responsibility there on, I guess, maybe on my part to share the good things. And I don't know that it's any more of a mystery than that, to be able to give back to those who are not as fortunate. And I do kind of tend toward children's causes. They are our future. And you know, hope to help them out wherever we can.
Is there something like this going on while you're here in East Lansing? Are you looking at a charity here?
Everywhere we go, we look for a local cause. And so I found a group called MSU Food Bank. And I got
sure.
in touch with the organizer yesterday, and we're going to donate a portion of proceeds from our trip up here to that food bank. I think their warehouse is out there, on Mint Road. And anybody can donate directly to them.
Your songs have done well in the international song competition. Tell us about that.
That was
you must be proud. I mean, you recognized internationally.
So there's an organization in Nashville called Nashville Songwriters Association. They're a premier advocate for songwriters really around the planet, but especially in America. And they advocate in Washington, D.C. Well, some of that support system put the co-writers together for the song that did win that country category for that competition, Mike Willis and Jackie Cavan. And that was our first song we ever wrote together. And it pretty much scared the you-know-what out of us. And so we have written other songs, but that was quite a bar to set. And but it just, we just, with Mike especially, we just hit the ground running, and he's wonderful to work with.
We want to hear as much of your last song as possible, so we'll wrap up the interview here now. Just briefly tell our listeners where they can find your new record.
DavidGSmithMusic.com. We'll get you there.
Simple enough. DavidGMusic.com. David G. Smith has been our Live Music Friday guest. You have a couple of chances to catch him live today. An acoustic lunch set at the Broad Art Museum on the MSU campus. That's at 12:30. Tonight, a Pump House concert at the Pump House on Orchard Street in East Lansing starting at 7. His new album is called First Love. David, thank you very much. Kathy Dunbar, the Lansing City Council, who does not support a proposal for the council to hire outside legal help to investigate the mysterious departure of City Attorney Janine McIntyre, is our guest on Monday on Current State and lots more. You're leaving us with a song called Fear.
You bet.
David G. Smith, wrapping up Current State. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, I had it all planned out with wine and dinner and such. I had a ring picked out. I liked this girl that much. But halfway through our evening, I felt an awful dread starting in my body and ending up in my head. Fear, that son of a gun, always saying something can't be done, with a godless voice and a Judas tongue. That's what got me here. I didn't speak my heart, I just listened to fear. Took her home early that night, I told her I wasn't well. Yes, it was a bald-faced lie.